It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me as we move through the heart of summer. And I thought this morning I would start off with a little tale, if you will, or story about being in the American West. And I know many of you have traveled in the American West, or if you haven't, you're thinking about doing it. And so I thought I would take a little bit of a moment here to talk about a really off-the-beaten experience I had last week. And that was in northern Utah and southern Idaho. Often when we travel to the American West, we get on an interstate and we go from one truck stop to the next or one place of gas to get to the next. And you really don't see America from the interstate. You do see it, but you see it at about 70 miles an hour, of course, unless you're in a construction zone. And then you see a lot of it for a long time going nowhere. But if you get off the main road, as I did last week, and you travel the back roads of southern Idaho or northern Utah, you have an entirely new perspective about the vastness of the American West, about how few people actually live there. And I was in the least settled county in Idaho, Owyhee County, where there are fewer than 2,000 people living in the largest county in Idaho. And it was an experience of a gravel drive for about 200 miles from Grandview, Idaho, all the way through the Jordan Valley, Oregon, and then on. And during that time, it gives you a sense not only of the vastness, as I said, but part of my drive was along the Oregon Trail, and it gives you an experience. And I actually got out and I walked for about 3 hours on the Oregon Trail through ranch land, BLM land, and it gives you a sense as to, my goodness, how was this country ever settled by those original settlers? What an incredibly hardy and in many ways desperate group of people they were. To walk along the Oregon Trail as I did through sagebrush and desert and up and over rocky crags and down through valleys. You think about them doing this in covered wagons or on foot, but they didn't have the kind of shoes, nice hiking boots that I had. And you look at the wagon trails that still today, 160 years after some people blazed across the Oregon Trail, those wagon ruts are still as clear as day in the ground. And walking along, occasionally you would find an artifact left from a settler coming across, whether it be a piece of metal or it be they ground up corn with things that look like horseshoes. You could see where they camped. It's the way to see the American West, if you will, instead of from just the window of your car. And to understand the difficulty, and not only was the terrain so difficult, but of course it was also hostile, not only hostile from the point of view of grizzly bears, but hostile from the point of view of American Indians who did not take kindly to their land being invaded. And I went across an area and went to the site of what's called the Butte Massacre, which was the largest massacre of any wagon train coming across the Oregon Trail. It was a horrific massacre of virtually everybody. Over 30 people were wiped out in a surprise attack from the Indians, and a few people escaped. And the stories that they have written about since then are just, well, they really make you wonder how desperate you must have been to go across the American West. So on this drive that I had and walk along the Oregon Trail for almost 200 miles of gravel, I saw exactly two vehicles, both of them carrying horses headed off to ranches. I saw over this 200 miles, I saw six houses. And this is not desert. This is big ranch country, big BLM country. I saw exactly six homesteads, and for 200 miles, and by the way, you don't drive 50 miles an hour, you don't drive 30 miles an hour. You drive about 10 to 15 miles an hour as these roads wind over and around rocky crags. And this is a road that was made for one purpose, to get people and cattle from point A to point B, not a road made for transportation. So I was hoping the whole time I wouldn't have a flat tire. Fortunately, I didn't. I had plenty of gas. I had plenty of water. But it was an experience of about 8 hours of driving through the loneliness of the American West, giving you a time to reflect, but also a time really to realize this is an awfully big country. And as we're sitting in Chicago with millions of us packed in upon each other, and you go to the beach at Oak Street Beach today, and there'll be thousands of people there. You go up and down the lake shore, and everyone's out recreating. It's a beautiful summer day. And yet in our country, we have the ability for complete solitude if we'll just seek it out. And obviously, I'm not suggesting that we live in solitude, but I am saying that every so often, it's not bad to load up your car with your family or just on your own to go and take a drive, take a few days and see a part of the country where very few people have ever gone and are likely very few people ever will go. And if you have the opportunity to take some time, take a day, take 2 days, take even a few hours, even an hour, to walk the Oregon Trail in some of the remote parts of the American West, you, I'm sure, as I did, will have a renewed appreciation for not only the vastness of the land, but for how difficult it was for the settlers who came across the American West, and how very much they were determined to make a better life for themselves. All their worldly belongings packed up into a little wagon that was drawn by horses and could hold not very much at all. And by the way, those things did not have very good springs. And if you've ever sat on an old wagon as I have, I think you would rather walk than ride. And of course, the death toll from disease and from sickness was just terrible. But beyond that, those people that made it, of course, helped build what is America today. But whether it's this summer or next summer or spring or fall, I don't advise it in the winter, take a drive across some of the more desolate roads of the American West and get out and walk the Oregon Trail. You'll have a renewed perspective on the vastness of the land, as I said, and certainly an appreciation for those people who risked it all to go and make a new life in the settlement of a country. Quite an experience that I had. I'll be back in just a moment. When I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about Washington and the Bureau of Land Management and the sage-grouse situation, and also what is beginning to look like a not very good breeding season on the Canadian prairies as drought appears to have really settled in across much of the land. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are. Communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology. Tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Now, during the Chevy All-Star Open House, get 20% below MSRP on all 2019 Chevy Silverado double cab pickups. That's over $9,750 on the Silverado double cab LT All-Star Z71. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details on the Chevy All-Star Open House going on now through July 31st. The all-new Chevy Silverado. It's made for the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And I'm going to bounce now on a little bit of political activity that's going on around the country, or actually government inertia, if you will. The first, let's start off with what is going on with our tax dollars. I know we're always interested in how our tax dollars are being spent. And in the case of conservation, We would like to think that they're always spent wisely. We hope they are. Sometimes that's not the case. So let's talk for a moment about the sage-grouse situation in the American West, with the sage-grouse being virtually listed on the precipice of being listed as an endangered species. The sage-grouse was, of course, a bird that helped feed the American West as settlers moved across the land. It was a bird of great bounty until very recently, being the last 15 years or so. And then the sage-grouse populations, for reasons that are really not known or widely understood, has just collapsed. And in certain parts where there were leks of several hundred birds, leks being where grouse come and spring and dance and mate, it's a phenomenal sight. We're down to leks being totally extinguished, or we're in situations where there are just a few birds left in these leks. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has avoided listing it as an endangered species for the reasons that it would impact millions and millions of acres in the American West and change how those acres are used. So they've done everything that's short of listing them as an endangered species, but what they haven't done is really step back and understand why this is happening. And so I had the opportunity this past week to spend some time with individuals who've lived in the American West a long time, who understand the sage-grouse from the point of view of living with them, not from the point of view of staring at a computer, not from the point of view of reading scientific papers, but from what often is the best perspective, and that is day after day, year after year, for generations, watching a bird because you live amongst them as you're moving your cattle or you're harvesting your hay. And the impression, the opinion you get from individuals on the land is entirely different from the opinion we get from reading the papers coming out of the Fish and Wildlife Service in Washington, D.C., with biologists who are well-trained in their profession but have very little in-the-field experience. And I've said for a long time, and those of you listening for the past 20 years, you know that I believe we have to take a measure of field experience with a measure of scientific experience, and there really is no substitute for the power of observation over, in this case, 50, 60 years versus that of things being generated by individuals who are smart but don't have any field experience, and what they know is what they've read, and what they've read may not be reality on the land. And in the case of the sage-grouse, this is really what we're seeing. The Fish and Wildlife Service is spending now, we're going to be spending hundreds of millions of dollars trying to bring back a bird that may be in decline for reasons that the Fish and Wildlife Service cannot address. The biggest issue for sage-grouse is fire. When fire rips across sage-grouse country, sage habitat, obviously, it destroys the sagebrush, and with that, the destruction of the sagebrush goes the sage-grouse, and it takes a long time for sagebrush to come back. So the event of fire has had a huge impact on sage-grouse, and all of us are aware that each year it seems as though more and more of the American West is burning, and in fact, it is burning, and it's burning because of poor management over many, many years of nature not having its run. But the number one thing that really can wipe out sage-grouse leks are fire. Fish and Wildlife Service is not doing anything about that. The other thing that has absolutely had a huge impact on the sage-grouse is the explosion of birds of prey. And the Fish and Wildlife Service does not want to hear this. Those people who don't believe in management don't want to hear it. But the reality is we have had, in some places in the American West, a 600% increase in the raven population. And this is also going on in Canada. It's having a big impact on waterfowl populations. Well, ravens in particular are just, they're very smart, and they are voracious at raiding sage-grouse nests and taking eggs. So if you've had a 600% increase in certain areas of the American West where sage-grouse are concentrated, you are going to have a decline in the sage-grouse population. But the Fish and Wildlife Service is not taking any action that I'm aware of to reduce the birds of prey population on the sage grouse. So you've got the Fish and Wildlife Service deciding that instead of taking action against predators, they want to take action by cutting down thousands of acres of juniper trees. They wanted to reduce cattle grazing. They want to fence off areas. And the birds of prey are simply having meals every day. And I think you could chart, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to do this, you could chart the decline in sage grouse populations directly with that, with the birds, with the increase of birds of prey, which have exploded across America, but in this case we're talking about the American West. And you can directly talk about the increase in the raven population. The third factor that the Fish and Wildlife Service will acknowledge, but again has no ability to control, is that of disease. The West Nile virus has moved into sage grouse populations, just as it has moved into the populations of sharp-tailed grouse, and in the Midwest, rough grouse, which have just declined incredibly because of West Nile. So West Nile moved across the country. It has infected the sage grouse population. It infected the quail population. And when it does, it reduces those populations by a huge amount. They naturally will recover. The birds that survive are, in fact, have an immunity to West Nile, but it absolutely whacks the population. And if those of us who are dealing right now with rough grouse and the decline in the rough grouse population, particularly in Wisconsin and Minnesota and northern Michigan, we're well aware that West Nile is a huge cause of that decline. It's no different in the American West, and yet the Fish and Wildlife Service is doing nothing about that because they can't do anything about it. So the three things that after spending a considerable time with multi-generation ranchers and people who are on the land every day have said they've watched, their land hasn't changed. In the past 50 to 60 years, the use of these ranches have not changed. They mow their alfalfa the same way. They bale their hay the same way. They graze their cattle the same way. They haven't been cutting down sagebrush. What has changed is there's more fire. The predator population is everywhere. You cannot drive or look in the sky without seeing a bird of prey, and they eat sage grouse. And that probably is the single biggest factor. And then the West Nile virus, which has moved through the population and will move through the population until it works its way through. It does not cause a species to go extinct. It simply causes a species to go into decline, and then they rebound. Those are the three factors that are causing the enormous and catastrophic decline in sage grouse across the American West. The Fish and Wildlife Service, on the other hand, is not doing anything about those three factors that I'm aware of because it can't. It won't touch birds of prey. It won't touch predators. When in fact, if we just simply reduce the raven population by a substantial amount, we might see the sage grouse come back. And it wouldn't cost us hundreds of millions of dollars in failed habitat management programs that, even if the habitat's improved, it's doing nothing about the predator population. So that's a little bit on the sage grouse and how your tax dollars are being spent. And I'm sure there are many people who will disagree with what I've just said, but I'd like to introduce them to hundreds of American Western ranchers who look at the sage grouse every day and can pretty much tell them what's happened. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter. I'm the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. I hope you have a great week in the great outdoors, and I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on what's going on in America's outdoors.